Occasionally, I have run into parents who say, "We went to your workshop about 8 weeks ago, and we enjoyed it. We have two fairly difficult kids, aged 7 and 5. When we went home, we were very surprised. 1-2-3 magic worked, and our children were much better behaved. But that was 2 months ago. The 1-2-3 method is not working anymore. We need a new discipline program." What's the problem here? 90% of the time, the problem is that the parents forgot the no talking and no emotion rules. Adults can slip up like this without even being aware of it. Remember our 4-year-old tantrum artist and the electronic device. Here's how that scene might sound if the parent is unwittingly talking too much and getting too excited while attempting to count the child's outburst. That's one. "Come on now, I'm getting a little tired of this. Why can't you do one little thing for us? Look at me when I'm talking to you, young man." "Okay, that's two. One more, and you're going to your room. Do you hear me? I'm sick and tired of you whining and fussing over every little thing you can't have. One more, and that's it. Your sister never behaves this way. Your father's coming home in half an hour. Okay, enough. That's three. Take five. Beat it. Out of my sight." What was that? That was a parental temper tantrum. Now we have two tantrums going on in the same kitchen. This adult's outburst was not the 1-2-3 program at all. What's wrong with what this angry parent just did? Three things. If you do communicate, like this parent just did, what you are really saying is simply this: let's fight. And if you don't have a kid with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ODD, oppositional defiant disorder, or CD, conduct disorder, you're still going to get a fight. Plenty of kids would rather cut off their left leg than lose a good battle of words. Unwise attempts at talking or persuading are guaranteed to take a child's focus off the possibility of good behavior and put it on the prospect of an enjoyable and energetic argument. Second, many difficult children do have ADHD. That doesn't mean they don't get enough attention. It means they can't pay attention. Faced with that huge mass of adult words, how is an ADHD child, or any other child for that matter, supposed to pick out the most important parts, which are the counts or warnings? He can't. Children can't respond properly to warnings if they don't hear them clearly in the first place. Finally, even if you forget all the emotion involved, as mom or dad talks more and more, their basic message changes. When a parent gives lots and lots of reasons to a child regarding why he should shape up, the real message becomes, "You don't have to behave unless I can give you 5 or 6 good reasons why you should. And, gee, I certainly hope you agree with my reasons." This is not discipline. The word describing this strategy starts with the letter B. It's begging. When you beg like this, you are, 1, trying to think for your child, 2, taking the responsibility for his behavior, and 3, really caught up in the little adult assumption. What's the average child going to do? He's going to take issue with your reasons. "Katie doesn't always do what you say. Daddy's not coming home in half an hour." Now you have, in effect, left the discipline ballpark, and you're out in the street arguing. The main issue, your child's behavior, has been forgotten. So if the child is acting up, it's, "That's one, bite your tongue." Then, if necessary, "That's two, easy does it, keep quiet." And so on. Count firmly, but respectfully. Your voice can be casual, or even a little stern. Remember that the magic is not in the counting. It's in the pregnant pause right after the warning. In that moment, if the adult keeps still, the responsibility for the child's behavior falls squarely on the child's own shoulders. You wouldn't want it any other way. When it comes to counting, your silence will speak louder than your words. Our famous Twinkie example. Our famous Twinkie example will help you better understand the workings of the 1-2-3 program. This is a situation almost all parents have experienced at one time or another. And you may remember it from the beginning of the introduction to this audiobook. Mom is cooking dinner at 5:45 p.m. when her 8-year-old daughter walks into the kitchen. Can I have a Twinkie? No, dear. Why not? Because we're eating at 6 o'clock. Is there anything wrong with this conversation? No. The child asks a clear question, and the parent gives a clear answer. The problem, however, is that some kids won't leave it there. They will press the issue further by adding in a whiny voice, "Yeah, but I want one." What is this parent going to do now? She's a little aggravated, and she's already given the necessary explanation. Should she repeat herself? Elaborate on her answer? Keep quiet? Give a reprimand? Let's play this situation through in three scenes. In scene one, we'll have a mother who believes that kids are little adults, and that words and reasons will work everything out. We'll see what happens with that approach. Then in scene two, our mother will be getting smarter. She will be starting to use counting, but the child won't be used to it yet. In scene three, the mother will be using the 1-2-3 method, and her daughter will be used to the program and know how to respond to it. Scene 1, starring the mother who believes kids are little adults. Can I have a Twinkie? No, dear. Why not? 'Cause we're eating at 6 o'clock. Yeah, but I want one. I just said you couldn't have one. You never give me anything. What do you mean I never give you anything? Do you have clothes on? Is there a roof over your head? Am I feeding you in 2 seconds? You gave Joey one half an hour ago. Listen, are you your brother? And besides, he eats his dinner. I promise I'll eat my dinner. Don't give me this promise, promise, promise stuff, Monica. Yesterday at 4:30 in the afternoon, you had half a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and you didn't eat anything at dinner. Then I'm going to kill myself and then run away from home. Well, be my guest. I'm sick of this. You can see where trying to talk at the wrong time can get you. Though everything Mom said was true, her talking made the situation worse. In the next scene, Mom is getting smarter and starting to use the 1-2-3 program. But it's new, and the child is still getting used to it. Scene 2, starring the mother beginning the 1-2-3 program. Can I have a Twinkie? No, dear. Why not? Because we're eating at 6 o'clock. Yeah, but I want one. That's one. You never give me anything. That's two. Then I'm going to kill myself and then run away from home. That's three. Take five. Mom did much better. The temporarily unhappy child disappears for a rest period, and the episode is over. How's it going to go when the child is more used to counting and realizes that testing and manipulation are useless? Scene 3. The 1-2-3 after the child is used to counting. Can I have a Twinkie? No, dear. Why not? Because we're eating at 6 o'clock. Yeah, but I want one. That's one. Pause. Oh, all right. Grumpy exit from kitchen. Good work by Mom again. She doesn't have to count the grumpy, oh, all right, because the comment is minor, and the child is leaving the scene of the crime. If the child had said, "Oh, all right, you stupid jerk," there would be an automatic three, and the girl would be off to her room for a longer time out. Is ignoring the child's badgering an option? Perhaps, if, one, the child quickly gets the message and drops the issue, and if, two, the parent can stand it. But in general, and especially in the beginning, counting is best. The benefits of counting. There are a lot of benefits to using the 1-2-3 program to manage difficult childhood behavior. Here are just a few of them. Energy savings. The 1-2-3 method will save you a lot of breath and a lot of aggravation. Parents and teachers say counting makes discipline a whole lot less exhausting. Give one explanation, if absolutely necessary, and then count. No extra talking, and no extra emotion. You stay calmer, and you feel better about your child and yourself when you get a good response at one or two. When is an explanation or more talking absolutely necessary? In those instances when the problem involved is something new that the child does not understand, when his behavior was unusual or dangerous, or when you really need more information from him about what happened. Here's an example. Your 7-year-old son has been learning trampoline in gym class, and he loves it. After school, he comes home, takes off his shoes, and attacks the couch in the living room. He's jumping up and down and trying to do flips. You enter the room, see what's going on, and are somewhat startled. You say, "That's one." Your son says, "What did I do?" Is an explanation in order? Yes. He's never been trampolining on your couch before. You tell them that although he took off his shoes, which you appreciate, you're afraid he'll hurt himself or ruin the couch, and that's why you counted. Good explanation. Quick tip. Give one explanation, if absolutely necessary, and then count. No extra talking and no extra emotion. You stay calmer and you feel better. When is an explanation not necessary? Imagine that a few hours later, on the same day, the same 7-year-old, for no apparent reason, gives his younger sister a medium-sized shove right in front of you. You say, "That's one." He growls, "What did I do?" You say, "That's two." This is pure defiance, not a real question. Do you need to explain that he just shoved his sister? Of course not. An explanation here would simply invite the boy to argue with you. And this kid sounds like he's ready for an argument. Argue back, and you have just left the discipline ballpark again. More affection, more fun. It's sad to say, but in many families, careless attempts at discipline take up lots and lots of time. The talk, persuade, argue, yell, and sometimes hit syndrome can run its course in less than a minute, but it can also occupy hours and hours. During this time, everyone is agitated and angry. Parents do not like their kids, and kids do not like their parents. With the 1-2-3 method, the issue is usually settled in a matter of seconds. Are the children frustrated when they are counted and don't get their way? Of course. But they get over it more quickly than they would if you and they spent an hour or so trying to persuade, argue, and yell each other into submission. After counting, things quickly go back to normal. You can enjoy your kids, and they can enjoy you. There is not only more time for fun and affection, but you also feel more like having fun and being affectionate. Your authority is not negotiable. You would go crazy if you had to negotiate, every day, issues like getting up, going to school, going to bed, homework, whining, and sibling rivalry. But you shouldn't have to, because you are the boss. As a matter of fact, as a parent, you must frustrate your kids on a regular basis, because you can't possibly give them everything they want. Many parents complicate their job of discipline by trying to be too nice. In other words, they set two goals for themselves instead of just one. Their first goal is to discipline their children, which is fine. But their second goal is to get the kids to like it. Like the mother in scene one of the famous Twinkie example, the parents talk and talk and talk, waiting for the children to say something like, "Gee, I never looked at it like that before. Thanks for taking the time to explain it to me. I appreciate your efforts to raise me to be a responsible child." Let's get real. There's the little adult assumption lurking in the back of the parental brain again. If your child does listen all the time, and more talking seems to help, fine. You're lucky. But with frustrated children, that is not usually the case. Too often, all that talking escalates to arguing, and worse. The punishment is short and sweet. The 1-2-3 magic program is a control on the kids. But it's also a control on the parents. As a parent, it's not always easy to be reasonable, especially when you're angry. These days, there is an argument about the use of punishment in raising kids. Some vote for no punishment at all. Some vote for limited punishment. And sadly, some parents are just plain brutal and take punishment too far. I once spoke with a mother who was court-ordered to see me because she'd poured Drano down her 4-year-old's throat once when the child talked back to her. I also knew a father who set fire to his daughter's doll in the kitchen sink after dousing the thing with lighter fluid, after a long argument about homework. These are examples of cruel, unusual, and stupid punishments. Though the vast majority of parents will never come close to taking such ridiculous and nasty measures, they may still be vulnerable to episodes of yelling, name-calling, belittling, or even rough physical tactics. But with 1-2-3 magic, the consequences are reasonable, well-defined, and just potent enough to do the job. Are timeouts and timeout alternatives punishments? Yes. But they are not cruel, unusual, or stupid. A timeout is also a chance for everyone to calm down. These brief and reasonable consequences do not make the child so mad that he wants more. With this regimen, for example, most kids come back from timeout having forgotten about the whole thing. And you as the parent are not allowed to bring up and rehash what happened, unless absolutely necessary. So that also helps the house quickly return to normal. So what's the bottom line? Is there a role for punishment in raising children? Yes, but mild, reasonable punishment, administered by a non-tantruming parent. Easy for other caretakers to learn. The 1-2-3 program is easy enough to learn that you can train babysitters, grandparents, and other caregivers to use it. Parents who are using 1-2-3 at home often tell their child's teachers about the program. In turn, teachers who use 1-2-3 magic in class often share the idea with parents who are struggling with their child's behavior at home. When kids get the same message from everyone at home and at school, this cross-situational consistency makes the program much more powerful and easier for the children to learn. Whether at home or at school, that's one means you're doing something wrong, and it's time to shape up. We have found that homeschool coordination of the 1-2-3 program is especially helpful with behaviorally difficult children. When both parents and teachers use counting fairly and consistently, and when they also respect the no talking and no emotion rules, we have seen positive changes take place in the behavior of some very challenging kids. Timeout alternatives. TOAs. For various reasons, there may be times when you do not want to use a timeout as the consequence for a child arriving at a count of three. Perhaps there isn't time for a rest period when you're dashing out the door in the morning. Perhaps you feel you want a consequence with a little more clout. Or perhaps you want a consequence that fits the crime. The judicious use of timeout alternatives can be of great value. Here are some TOA possibilities. Earlier bedtime. No dessert or treat. No use of phone. No friend over. No conversation. 15 minutes. Removal of DVD, iPod. Reduced computer time. Loss of TV for evening. Loss of electronic games. 2 hours. Monetary fine. Small chore. Wash bathroom sink. Larger chore. Weed yard. Write a paragraph. Groundings, fines, chores, and losses like these can be very useful as consequences, and there are many other options. The list of timeout alternatives is limited only by your imagination. Remember to keep the punishments fair and reasonable. Your goal is to teach the child something, not to be cruel or get revenge. Consequences can also be what some people call logical or natural, which means the punishment fits the misbehavior. Throwing a football in the house, for example, might result in the football being taken away. Or a count of three might mean the loss of an ice cream bar that was dripping on the car seat. The TV can be turned off if warnings to turn the volume down are ignored. In applying natural consequences, remember that kids are still just kids. Exasperated lectures from you along the lines of, "Well, this wouldn't have happened if you'd simply listened to me in the first place," are unnecessary. Unnecessary conversation from you also interferes with your child's ability to appreciate the connection between his behavior and its consequences. 6. Advice for nearly any counting challenge. Answers to our most frequently asked questions. 1-2-3 Magic's counting strategy is straightforward. But managing kids' irritating behavior is never an easy job. At this point, you probably have a number of questions about this first big phase of parenting. Let's take a look at some of the most frequently asked ones. What if the child won't go to timeout? If the child won't go to his room after hitting a count of three, remember, you are not allowed to use little adult attempts at persuasion, such as, "Come on now, do what Dad told you. It's only for 5 minutes, and then you'll be able to go back and play. I'm not asking a lot." And so on and so on. What you do instead depends on how big you are and how big the child is. The little kids. Let's say you weigh 125 pounds, and your 5-year-old son weighs 45 pounds. If he doesn't go to his room at 3, you simply move toward him. Some kids will stay 2 feet ahead of you all the way to the room. That's okay. They'll soon start going by themselves. Other kids have to be escorted. Keep your mouth closed while doing this, which can mean taking them gently by the arm, as well as dragging or carrying them to the room. The bigger kids. Now, let's imagine that it's 5 years later. Your 10-year-old son at this point weighs 95 pounds, and you, through a rigid program of diet and exercise, still weigh 125. You are no longer in a position to get into a physical altercation with this boy. He's too big, and wrestling matches make a fool out of you. Your savior here will be the timeout alternative. If after your "that's three, take 10," your son doesn't appear to be going anywhere, you inform him that he has a choice. He can go for timeout or choose one of the following. Bedtime half an hour earlier. 50 cents off his allowance. No electronic entertainment for the evening. Community service. Some kind of small chore is also a nice option. Some parents have used weeding or scrubbing a sink or toilet. Many parents let the child pick the consequence. If the child refuses, the parent selects the punishment. A problem arises here because your child hasn't gone to his room and the two of you are still face to face. Lots of kids in this situation want to stick around and argue with you about how stupid your rules are, how stupid 1-2-3 Magic is, and how stupid the guy who wrote it must be. You know you're not allowed to argue. What are you going to do? You can use a reverse timeout, in which you just turn around and leave the room. Go to your room or even the bathroom if necessary, having stocked them with good reading materials beforehand, and wait the storm out. Or walk around the house a few times. But don't talk. Some parents have asked, "Why should I be the one to leave? After all, I'm the adult." Fine. Stay put if you can keep quiet and avoid both being provocative and being provoked. But if your real motive is the desire to stick around for a good fight, that's a bad strategy. Can you count different misbehaviors to get to 3? Yes. You don't have to have different counts for each different kind of misbehavior. Imagine. Let's see, he's on a 1 for throwing that block across the room. He's on a 2 for teasing his sister. He's on a 1 for yelling at me. He's on a 2 for... This routine would soon drive you insane, and you'd need to use your computer to keep track of everything. So if the child pushes his sister, for example, that's 1. If he throws a block across the room, that's 2. And then if he screams at you for counting him, that's 3, take 5. Mom could say 1, Dad could say 2, and Mom or Dad could say, that's 3. In fact, we encourage you to share the joy. Actually, it's better if Mom and Dad do both count, because then the kids know that both parents are behind the plan. They are consistent and really serious. The involvement of both parents makes it easier for the children to shape up. In the same way, the involvement of both home and school in doing the 1-2-3 method also makes it easier for kids to behave, especially the really difficult children. Quick tip. What if the child won't go to timeout? It's okay to escort little kids to their chair or room. That could mean carrying them, but you must keep quiet. Switch older kids to a timeout alternative. Give them a choice, or decide yourself, then walk away. Can you ever ignore anything? Introducing the MBA. How do you know when you should count? Usually it's not too difficult to tell. Most of the time, if you're irritated about something and that something is a stop behavior, you should be counting. Just to be sure, you and your kids can write a list of countable behaviors. However, there can be times when you're irritated but the kids are not really misbehaving, and you should not count. We call these activities MBAs. Minor but aggravating actions that may rub you the wrong way, but are not really misbehavior. Humming, singing the same song over and over, rolling the eyes and stomping to time out, squirminess, chasing the dog, and eating all the frosting off the top of the cupcake first may be examples. If the child's not really misbehaving, and you're just in a bad mood, the best thing to do is grit your teeth and keep quiet. Caution. Your kids already have their MBAs. Minor but aggravating actions that may rub you the wrong way, but which are not really misbehavior. These may include humming, squirminess, rolling the eyes, and eating the frosting off the top of the cupcake first. The question of ignoring certain types of behavior leaves room for some variations among parents. Why? Because some parents simply have longer fuses than others. Some parents, for example, will ignore kids rolling their eyes, stomping off, grumbling and whining, while other parents will count. Some parents will ignore a child's yelling, or even pounding walls, as long as he's on his way to time out. Other parents will lengthen the rest period for that kind of behavior. Either strategy is correct if it is done consistently. You have to clearly define what kinds of child behavior, in your well-considered opinion, are too obnoxious, too rude, too aggressive, or too dangerous. Then make up your mind that those behaviors are the ones that will be counted. But in the beginning with 1-2-3 magic, don't ignore genuine misbehavior. In the beginning, when in doubt, count. After a while, when you're getting a good response at 1 or 2, you may be able to let up a little. Let's say, for example, that after a few weeks getting used to the 1-2-3 program, your child does something right in front of you that would normally be counted. Instead of counting right away, just watch your kid. The child can almost feel the count coming. Sometimes, if you say nothing, the child will spontaneously exercise self-control and stop the misbehavior. This response is ideal, because now the child is internalizing the rules and controlling himself without direct parental intervention. Isn't that the kind of person you want to drop off at the dorm on the first day of his freshman year in college? How long do you take in between counts? About 5 seconds, just long enough to allow the child time to shape up. Remember that we're counting stop, obnoxious behaviors, such as arguing, whining, badgering, and teasing. It only takes a child 1 second to cooperate with you by stopping the annoying activity. We certainly don't want to give a child half an hour to continue a tantrum before giving him a 2. Counting is perfectly designed to produce the 1 second of motivation necessary for cooperation. We give the kids 5 seconds, though, which is a little more generous. Why 5 seconds? Because this brief pause gives the children time to think things over and do the right thing. In those few seconds, provided the adult keeps quiet, kids learn to take responsibility for their own behavior. If a child hits a 1 or a 2, does he stay at that count for the rest of the day, even if he does nothing else wrong? No. The time perspective of young children is short. You would not say, that's 1, at 9 in the morning, that's 2 at 11:15, and that's 3, take 5, at 3 in the afternoon. We have what we call our window of opportunity rule. For example, if a 6-year-old does 3 things wrong in a 30-minute period, each warning counts toward the total of 3. But if he does one thing wrong, then an hour goes by, then he does something else he shouldn't, you can start back at 1. Very few children manipulate this rule by doing one thing, allowing 30 minutes to pass, and then figuring, now I get a free 1. If you feel your child is trying to get away with this, simply make the next count a 2 instead of going back to 1. The window of opportunity should be longer as kids get older. Here is a general guideline. For 4-year-olds, consider a time period of 10 or 15 minutes. For 11-year-olds, think about 2 to 3 hours. Classroom teachers in the primary grades do not usually use a short window because, with 25 children in the class, this would allow for too much potential misbehavior in too short a time. Instead, the counting period in school is expanded to cover the entire morning. All counts are washed away at lunchtime, and then the afternoon is treated as a new and separate window. Can you use a timeout chair instead of a room? You can use a stair or a chair for a timeout, but only if the child does not make a game out of the situation. Some kids, for example, sit on the chair at first, but then start gradually losing contact with it. Eventually, they may just be touching their little finger to the chair and looking at you like, "What are you going to do about this?" If your rule for timeout is simply that the child must stay in contact with the chair, this is no problem. But if the child is getting on and off or away from the chair and you're uncertain what to do, this kind of game will ruin the discipline. We usually prefer that visual contact between parent and child be broken during the rest period, so the child can't tease or provoke you. That's why the child's bedroom or other safe room is preferable. However, many parents have successfully used stairs and chairs, and many report that the kids, even some wild ones, still sit on them, don't talk, and don't keep getting off. As a matter of fact, parents are often very creative in coming up with places for timeouts. Key concept. The main point is this. It is totally unproductive and harmful to be chasing the kids back into the room all the time. The child needs to know that there is a barrier that she is stuck with for a short period of time. What if the child won't stay in his room? Many kids will stay in the room for the time out, even if the door isn't shut. Others, however, will keep coming out. With very small children, one alternative is to just stand there blocking the way or to hold the door shut. After a few time outs, the kids get the idea that they can't come out. This tactic won't work, however, if you keep getting into major tugs of war with the door. If your discipline comes down to this level, you look stupid. A second alternative is to block the child's exit with the kind of gate that squeezes against the door jambs. These gates can be used as long as the children are not able to either climb over or knock down the device. Yet another option is to start the timeout over if the child comes out prematurely. Some parents will then double the time of the second rest period. This method, of course, won't be much help with 2 or 3-year-olds because they won't understand. But with older children, it can work well. Explain once, and then start. Some kids, however, are so rambunctious that they just keep coming out and accumulate what seem like thousands of extra timeout minutes. What should you do? You need to secure the door in some way or another. There are several options. Believe it or not, some parents of difficult children have made the child's bedroom door into a Dutch door. They saw the door in half, then lock the bottom part and leave the top part open during the timeout. You may think that's a fairly drastic solution. It is. But some kids require drastic but gentle solutions. Also available are plastic doorknob covers. These devices cover the knob and have to be squeezed tightly to turn the knob and open the door. Many young children aren't strong enough to accomplish this. Another idea is to simply put some kind of lock on the door. This advice worries some parents who think their child will become claustrophobic, or that locking the door is abusive. Locking the door for a short time is not by itself abusive. But for some groups, for example, foster parents, and in some places, for example, some provinces of Canada, it is illegal. If you have a really difficult child, you should check what regulations apply to your situation and get some professional advice. Here's an option for locking the door. You tell your child that as long as he stays in his room, the door will remain open or simply shut. But the first time he comes out, the door gets locked for the rest period. Many children will quickly learn to stay put without the door having to be locked. If you still prefer gates to locks, purchase one of the more solid gates that bolts into the door jambs. If the child can climb over the gate, get a taller one or put two up. The main point is this. Some children will try to keep coming out of the room. If so, securing the door in some way is absolutely essential. It is totally unproductive and harmful to be chasing the kids back into the room all the time. The child must know that the door is a barrier that he's stuck with for a short time. Once children learn they can't get out of the room, they will stop their tantrums and calmly accept the brief period of quiet. If you worry about the safety of the child, childproof the room, secure any windows, and remain outside the door during the timeout. But try not to let the child know you're there. If you still feel the child is not safe alone in the room, or if you feel he would suffer excessive separation anxiety, you may go into the room during the timeout, but no eye contact and no talking. And don't forget the 1 minute per year rule for the length of the rest period. Remember that you may not increase the length of the timeout simply because you're in a bad mood. You can increase the length of timeout to a point if the child did something that is exceptionally bad. What do you do if the child counts you back? Your 5-year-old is whining at you because you wouldn't take her to the pool on a hot summer day. You look at her, hold up one finger and say, "That's one." She looks back at you, holds up one tiny finger and says, "That's one to you too." What should you do? Oddly enough, this common occurrence sometimes throws even the most confident parents for a loop. They are at a loss on how to handle the unexpected rebellion. Some parents have even said, 1-2-3 magic doesn't work. The kid just counts me back. So what do you do? Your kids do not have the authority to count anyone, unless you give that power to them. The child might as well have said, "The moon is made of cream cheese." The comment itself means nothing, but it might be accountable misbehavior. Here's how you decide. If the child's remark appears to be a humorous attempt to tease you a little, you can just ignore it. But if her "that's one to you too" is sarcastic and disrespectful, count it by simply holding up two fingers and saying nothing. If the child again mocks your response, she will have just arrived at 3. Send her to time out and repeat as necessary. Can one of your kids count another one? Generally, no. The only time this can occur is if one child is old enough to babysit the other. But make sure you get a report when you come back. Does the room have to be a sterile environment? No. Many parenting books tell you the timeout room should be modeled after a cell in a state penitentiary. Complete and utter boredom. That'll teach them. This is unnecessary. The child can go to her room and read, take a nap, play with Legos, draw, and so on. Just to be safe, though, 3 things should be forbidden. No phone, no friends, and no electronic entertainment. Some people ask, well then, just how is a rest period supposed to work? My kid tells me that timeout's fine with her. She doesn't care, and she'll just go upstairs and play. Don't pay much attention to any child who says, "I don't care." That comment usually means the opposite. She does care. And if her room was such a great place to be, she would have been up there in the first place. The fact of the matter is that the power of the 1-2-3 method does not come so much from the timeout itself. It usually comes from the interruption of the child's activities. When this girl was timed out for hitting her brother, she was watching her favorite TV show. Now she has to miss a big chunk of the show. No one, including you, likes to be interrupted and miss out on something fun. If you really feel the timeout strategy is not effective, consider three things. First, are you still talking too much and getting too emotional during discipline efforts? Parental outbursts ruin everything. Second, if you feel you are remaining calm and timeout is still not working, consider another timeout place or room. Third, consider timeout alternatives. Why three counts? Children should respond the first time you ask. Why give the kids three chances to misbehave? It's interesting to hear different parents' reactions to 1-2-3 magic. Some people, usually those attempting to discipline their children for the first time, think counting is too dictatorial, while others see counting as a sign of parental weakness, believing that children shouldn't get three chances to misbehave before being punished. The reason for three counts is simple. You want to give the kids two chances, the first two counts, to shape up, unless what they did was so serious that it merited an automatic three. How are children going to learn to do the right thing if they never get a chance? And with counting, the chance comes right away, in the first few seconds following the count. That immediate opportunity helps them learn. They're just kids. What if you have other people over? By this time, you can probably anticipate the answer to this question. You will need to, 1, get used to counting in front of other people, and 2, not alter your strategy one bit when others are watching. The ultimate test, of course, is when you're out in public. Refer to the next chapter. For right now, we'll discuss what should happen in the safety of your own home. From time to time, other people will be at your home when your kids decide to act up. In fact, the presence of other people often seems to trigger disruptive behavior in many kids, presenting parents with the complicated challenge of disciplining children while on stage. Among the groups of people who perversely decide to put you in this awkward position are your children's friends, other parents, with or without their kids, and finally, grandparents. Let's examine the problems presented by each group. Other kids. If your child has a friend over, count your child just as you would if no one else were there. If your child gets timed out, he goes to the room and, remember, his friend may not join him. Just explain to the other boy or girl that you're using this new system and your child will be back in 5 minutes or so. If your son or daughter says to you, "Mom, it's so embarrassing when you count me in front of my friends," you say to them once, "If you don't want to be embarrassed, you can behave." Another thing you can do in this situation is count the other child, too. After all, it's your house. If his parent is there, you'd better ask permission and explain a bit before you start disciplining her child. Another variation with other kids over is 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, out of the house to play. This can be very helpful, especially if you have a difficult child who often gets overly excited when a playmate is over. With this routine, at the point where the third timeout would be assigned, instead of sending your child to the room again, both kids must now leave the house for a specified time, assuming the weather isn't nasty, and play outside. This variation of the 1-2-3 is very popular in Southern California. Or, even better, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, then send them over to the other kid's house to play. I've done it. Quick tip. If your child looks at you and says, "It's so embarrassing when you count me in front of my friends," you simply reply, "If you don't want to be embarrassed, you can behave." Other adults. If you have other adults over at your home, you will probably feel considerably more nervous counting your child. This discomfort is normal. Although you may feel a little self-conscious at first, you'll soon get used to doing the 1-2-3 method under these circumstances. So count. If you don't take the plunge, your children will sense you are much easier prey when other people are around. On the other hand, when you count in front of another parent, something surprising may happen that you will enjoy. For example, imagine you're talking to a friend and your child rudely and loudly interrupts you, demanding a snack. You calmly say, "That's one." Your child not only quiets down, but she also leaves the room. The other parent looks at you like, "What did you do?" Just tell her about 1-2-3 magic and explain how it works. This scene shows one of the major ways that 1-2-3 magic gets passed around. Grandparents. For our purposes here, there are three types of grandparents, whether you're visiting them or they're visiting you. The first and rarest type of grandparent is the cooperative grandparent. She will count along with you. You say one, grandma says two, and so on. That kind of cooperation is super, but it doesn't happen as much as we'd like. Like the first type, the second type of grandparent is also nice to have around. This person we call the passive or non-intrusive grandparent. This grandma or grandpa leaves you alone when you're disciplining the kids and doesn't interfere. That's often not easy for a grandparent. The third type of grandparent, however, is the antagonistic grandparent. He will say something to you like this. "You have to read a book to learn how to raise your kids? Why, when I was a boy, all Dad had to do was look at his belt." You know the rest. The message is that you don't need any of this modern psychological stuff. A second kind of antagonistic grandparent will actually interfere with your discipline. You say to little Bobby, "That's three, take five." And before he can move, Grandma butts in and says, "Oh, little Bobby didn't really do anything. Bobby, come and sit on Grandma's lap for a while." Some parents ask at this point, "Can you count the grandparents?" Probably not. But you do have an assertiveness problem on your hands. You may have to say something like, "You know, Mom, I love you very much. But these are our kids, and this is the way we're raising them." If you can't go along with the agenda, the visit may have to be cut short a little. Although this statement will be a very difficult one to make, the comment will definitely be an investment in your children's future. What if the child won't come out from time out? You probably know the answer to this one. Relax and enjoy yourself. You go to the bedroom door and say, "Time's up." Your son or daughter replies, "I'm never coming out again as long as I live." Don't say "good" or anything like that. Just walk away. Never chase a martyr. On the other hand, do not cheat by extending the time out. Imagine your child's time out was for 5 minutes. You just noticed, though, that you got distracted and 8 minutes elapsed. You think, "Oh, it's so peaceful, and she's being so quiet in her room. Why let her out?" Wrong. No fair. Keep an eye on the clock or timer, then tell the child when the time is up. If your girl has fallen asleep, and if it's okay for her to nap at this time of day, let her snooze for a bit. Some kids always want a hug and some reassurance when time out is over. What do you do? Give them a hug. But be careful with these little huggers. If a child repeatedly requests a hug, you'd better check to make sure you're using the program correctly. Some kids are just very sensitive, and any kind of discipline upsets them a little. Other children need reassurance because you were too harsh, emotionally or physically, before you sent them to the room. So if you get a little hugger, make sure you're gently following the no talking and no emotion rules. Quick tip. Why do kids always seem to act up whenever you're on the phone? It's probably because they think you are helpless. Let them know you're not by counting just as you would if you weren't talking to someone. Help. My kids go nuts when I'm on the phone. This problem brings back vivid memories to all parents. It seems that all parents have experienced their child acting up when the parents are on the phone. The ringing seems to be the signal that it's time to cut loose. At our house, the dog would also get into the act. The phone would ring, and the dog would bark. The dog's bark was a signal to the kids. "We've got another victim on the line. Get down here, and let's torture him for a while." Then they'd all be running around, yelling and barking and having a wonderful time. Whoever was on the phone would feel trapped and frustrated. Why do children always seem to act up when you're on the phone? At first, I thought it was because the kids were jealous of the parent talking to someone else and ignoring them. This may be partly true, but now I believe the main reason is that the children think you are helpless. The kids seem to believe that since your head is attached to the phone, you won't be able to do anything to counter them raising a ruckus. The best thing to do is count the children just as you would if you weren't on the phone, much like when you have other people over. While you're on the phone, you have somebody else present, but only listening, not watching. You may have to interrupt your conversation to count. You may have to put the phone down, or explain what you're doing to the person you're talking to, or even hang up so you can escort a little one to her room. Some calls become more expensive, but whatever it takes, do it. Otherwise, the children will know that you are a sitting duck every time someone calls. This phone routine is not easy in the beginning. After a while, though, many parents succeed in training the children to the point that the adults don't have to say anything while counting. They simply hold up the appropriate number of fingers while they continue their conversation. And the children respond because they know mom or dad means business. If you've gotten to this point, it's a mighty handy tactic to use when you're talking on the telephone. Key concept. The point behind 1-2-3 magic is that parents are ready for anything, rather than worrying what the kids are going to do next. The message is, I love you, and it's my job to train and discipline you. I don't expect you to be perfect, and when you act up, this is what I will do. What if the kid wrecks the room during his so-called rest period? The vast majority of children will not be room wreckers. Only a small percentage of kids will throw things around and mess up the room. An even smaller percentage of children will break things, tear their beds apart, or kick holes in the wall. Their parents need to know how to handle these sometimes scary actions. The point behind 1-2-3 magic is that parents be ready for anything, rather than feeling defensive and worrying, oh no, what is he going to do now? We want your attitude and message to the children to be something like this. You're my child, and I'm your parent. I love you, and it's my job to train and discipline you. I don't expect you to be perfect, and when you do something wrong, this is what I will do. Quick tip. If your child wrecks her room during a tantrum, one option is for you to ignore the mess and let her live in it for a few days. That might make the child think twice before doing it again. The credit for the solution to the room wrecking problem comes from a couple who visited my office a long time ago. They had an 8-year-old boy who was very nice to me in my office, but, according to his mom and dad, was hell on wheels everywhere else. These parents said they were thinking of putting this boy's name on their mailbox because it felt like he was running the house. They often referred to their son as King Louis XIV. This behavior obviously couldn't go on, so I asked these parents if they wanted to learn 1-2-3 magic. They said yes. I taught them the program, prepared them for testing and manipulation, and they went home to get started. This boy had been used to running the house, but when his parents got home, they were ready for him. When King Louis hit 3 for the first time, he could not believe what happened. How his parents got him to his room for his first rest period is still a mystery. But when he got there, he totally, and I mean totally, trashed the place. His first tactic, and perhaps the favorite of all room wreckers, was to empty his dresser and throw his clothes all over the floor. Then he ripped the blankets and sheets off his bed. Next, he pushed the mattress and box spring off the bed frame. Then he proceeded to his closet, took out all his hanging clothes, and threw them all over the room. After that, he tossed all his toys out of the closet. Finally, he went to the window and tore down his curtains. What did his parents do? Amazingly, they didn't call me for help. The first thing they did was nothing. They didn't clean up the mess or have King Louis clean it up. Any cleaning up would have meant loading the boy's gun again for the next time out, when he'd have another perfectly neat room to wreck. Second, Mom and Dad continued to count their son aggressively, but fairly. When the boy earned a 3, he got a 3, and a consequence. No fudging around with fractions such as, that's 2.5, that's 2 3/4. The parents would hit him with his well-earned 3, and then send him to his bedroom to rearrange the trash. When bedtime came, this boy had to find his pajamas. He also had to find his bed. In the mornings, his clothes for school didn't match for a week. How long did it take for King Louis to learn that there was new management in the old maison? It took about 10 days for him to start calming down during timeout. Then, after 3 or 4 days of peaceful timeouts, his parents helped him clean up his room. After that, believe it or not, he hated to be counted, and his parents would stop him on a dime with a count of 1. Now, did we break this boy's spirit? Was he going to be a marshmallow for the rest of his life? Certainly not. Now he was really and consistently the nice kid I had seen in the office. And his parents were in charge of their own house, as they should have been from the beginning. In addition, the boy started behaving better in school, where the teacher was also using the 1-2-3 program. If you think you're going to have a room wrecker before starting 1-2-3 magic, check out 2 things. If there is anything dangerous or harmful in the room, or anything valuable that can be broken, take it out before the first rest period. Room wrecking is one thing, but what do you do if your child urinates on the floor during timeout? Some kids have done it, usually preschoolers. You send them to timeout, and they are so mad that they pull down their pants and cut loose. What do? You time them out to the bathroom. I know what you're thinking. How naive. Do you really expect the child to use the facilities appropriately? The answer is no, but that's not the point. The point is this. What's easier to clean, the bedroom rug or the bathroom floor? If the child goes on the bedroom rug, cleaning is an expensive project. If the child goes on the bathroom floor or the smaller bathroom rug, it's a different story. The same advice holds true if you have a child who can get himself so upset that he throws up. In every workshop I've ever done, a few parents have kids like this. Make sure the bathroom's safe, then time him out to the bathroom, and stay cool. While we're on the subject, can you use counting for toilet training? No. Counting is not especially effective for potty training. One reason is that if you are trying to count for children messing in their pants, you don't always know the exact moment when the accident occurs, so you don't know just when to count. In addition, most experts agree that punishing kids for wetting or soiling is not particularly helpful. Though there are several effective ways to get kids to go on the toilet, my favorite method is for the parent to do very little formal training. Too many parents are in too big a hurry to get their kids potty trained, and this big rush can cause all kinds of trouble. Instead, let the kids see you use the toilet, and get them a potty chair of their own. Most children will eventually learn how to use the thing without much direct coaching from you. When they are successful, you can then praise and reward them. Another frequently unsuccessful parent tactic in this regard is repeatedly asking a child, when he's looking squirmy, if he has to go to the bathroom. It's much better to say this: someday you're going to surprise me and go on the potty. What if there's an obvious problem between two of your children, but you didn't see what happened? Your daughter, Susie, comes running into the kitchen and yells, "Dad, Bobby should get a 1. You haven't the slightest idea what the problem is, but the chances are the issue revolves around sibling rivalry. In general, our rule is this: if you didn't see the argument or conflict, you don't count it. If you hear it, you can count it. If you're in the kitchen and you hear a ruckus starting in the family room, for example, there's nothing to stop you from calling, "Hey guys, that's 1. Of course, you want to use this rule with flexibility. If you feel one child is consistently being victimized by another, you may have to intervene and count just the aggressive child. On the other hand, if the tattling is getting out of hand, many parents decide to count the tattler. Does being counted hurt the child's self-esteem? Most kids aren't counted a lot, so the mere quantity of counts is usually not a problem. Once you've gotten started at home, many children will not get any counts for days at a time. In a regular classroom, on an average day, fewer than 5 children will get any count at all. For those children who do get counted more often, if you are doing the 1-2-3 program correctly, there should be no significant threat of hurting self-esteem. What will hurt children's self-esteem is the yelling